This program originally aired in 1995.
Hi, I'm Mary McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Thelonious Monk Jr. He's the son of the famous pianist, composer Thelonious Monk. But he's lost no time in carving out his own career as a very creative drummer and composer. And more recently, he has created a very important organization, the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz, to promote and guide promising young musicians and give them financial support. Thelonious, how are you?
I'm fine. It's so nice to be here.
Welcome back from Africa, South Africa.
Whoa, what a trip. A very eye-opening, emotional trip for, I think, any American or anyone who comes from a free democratic society. When you get there and see people who've made a choice to live rather than die, is very, very startling.
Well, we've really got to talk about all that, but first I'm just dying to play something with you and then talk about the Institute and everything. So let's play a tune. You think we could do something nice and simple, free-flowing? Well, like all monks' tunes are, as a matter of fact. Blue Monk, would that be a good one to do?
Let's do it.
And, of course, we're fortunate in having you, a bass player, with us today, Mr. Scott Colley.
Oh, a marvel.
You know, there's something very strange playing with the son of Thelonious Monk. It's sort of amazing.
It's amazing to me also.
And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I feel so much that I want to do justice to his music.
Yes, I do too.
But there are so many tunes. I mean, I think it could take you an awful long time to really learn them all.
Yeah, and then there's so many versions by the composer himself, you know, where if you actually listen to his discography, you can hear the development of certain melodies over time to, you know, like there's certain tunes, like I think Monk's Dream, when he ultimately recorded it with Charlie Rouse for CBS, he had arrived at where he wanted that tune to start, even though that's a tune that really goes back to the very beginning of his career. I think it might be on one of his first or second trio records. He kept developing that theme. He kept changing exactly the way the bridge laid, exactly the way the melody laid. And then he finally got to a point where then he began to play it the same way, which is very uncharacteristic of Thelonious, because I think most of his tunes, he never got a chance to develop them to the point where he wanted to play them the same way.
It's so funny because, I mean, there's some that keep surfacing, or maybe they've been there all the time, but I just haven't happened to hear them. And we had Kenny Drew Jr. on
Kenny,
piano jazz.
Great young piano player.
And he played this tune, Ugly Beauty.
Yes,
and
yes.
I actually had not heard that tune.
Ugly Beauty is very interesting because Thelonious' titles were very important in terms of how they related to the composition. And Ugly Beauty, the first chord of Ugly Beauty is actually a strange chord, the very first chord. And Thelonious plays it on his, every time he ever played that tune, the first chord he plays is the ugliness and the beauty, because the rest of the tune is very simple and very easy to hear. But he starts off with that dissonance and makes the tune very unusual, because people don't quite understand why he calls it Ugly Beauty. But it has to do with the harmonics in the tune. It's a great tune.
Let's do it, because you're really you've sold the thing to me, and it's one that I really, I haven't learned it in the way of getting so comfortable and making it one way and then doing it better. And then, you know, I'm hoping I will, that I will keep playing the tune and it will eventually evolve into what I want it to be. But now you've given me some ideas about what Monk was thinking about when he did it. And let's see if I can handle that.
Okay. Okay.
That really is a hard tune, and I'm sort of letting everybody hear how little I know that tune. It really is a beautiful tune, but it just goes off in all directions.
It really, really does, and I found that it's very difficult for all musicians involved. You know, lots of time, often people think like a tune like that, well, for the drummer, there's really nothing to do. But on the contrary, it's so wide open and the tempo is so laid back. I mean, a waltz is generally, waltz is dance music in the minds
That's
of
right.
most people. So
That's
when you
right.
take that feeling down to the ballad, it automatically becomes difficult because it's juxtaposed to where you accustomed to having that. Then on top of that, as you said, you know, when we were going over it earlier, harmonically it leads you places. At least it appears to lead you in one place, but it's actually leading you somewhere else. And so it becomes very difficult to solo on. I found everyone has said that. I mean, some of the greatest piano players, including yourself,
never mind
in the
me.
World, who clearly they look at it and they say, "Oh yeah, this is a cute little thing." But it's a monstrous. It's just a tribute to Thelonious' genius.
Well, and of course, when I think of you being the son of Thelonious Monk, I mean, how sometimes the son goes off and doesn't want to know that his father was famous.
Oh.
But in your case, it's just the opposite. And
it's the opposite. You know why it's the opposite? Because I found that everyone was so intrigued by this fellow that I said, I have to find out exactly what it is, because he's been daddy for me. And that's like one thing, but then there's this side of this fellow that has intrigued the world. What is it all about? I thank God that I was given the ear to hear it, because I discovered Thelonious Monk, composer, on a summer afternoon in 1968 or 69 was when I discovered Thelonious. It wasn't as simple as growing up in the house and being around and, oh, daddy plays piano and everything is cool. I was 18 years old, really, when I discovered. And the moment I discovered who he was, this other person, I got scared to death, because then I realized what everyone had been telling me since I was a little boy. Oh, do you know who your father is? And, you know, you've got the name of this and that. And that kind of stuff sort of, it swirls around your head. But you don't really know what it means.
Well, and of course, you yourself joined the band, or you played with him when you were 19.
Yes, I did, and that too was, you know, see, Thelonious has given me so many great gifts. See, the gift on that day was the gift of trial by fire, which he could have easily removed from the equation for me, which I think would have changed very much the way I approached being a musician from that point on. Because, you know, everyone expected that, if Thelonious is going to allow me to play, well, he's going to do things so that I can get over very easy. But
oh,
he didn't.
You mean he's going to sort of
lighten up for you? No, man. The first day he called me, he came in the house on the afternoon, and he looked at me in the eye. I was sitting watching some mindless show on television, and he said, "Are you ready to play?" That's all he said. And then the next thing I know, 2 days later, we were on national television. No rehearsal, no indication of what we were going to play or why we were going to play it or when we were going to play it. And it was exactly what I had read in liner notes and the mythology, you know, about Monk is about just hit. And here we were.
Well, but you already had the drums, like people like Max and Art Blakey.
Yeah.
Max Roach had come over. And mm-hmm. Didn't you get a set of drums from Max?
I got a set of drums from Art Blakey. I got lessons from Max Roach.
So then when he called you like that to play, you were already pretty competent then at the drums.
No,
I would think.
Not at all. Because really? See, I had and one of the reasons that he called me to play, which I learned after my mother told me, was the fact that I was in fact scared. I was one of those young musicians who was practicing literally 8-10 hours a day, 7 days a week, but I wasn't aggressively pursuing gigs because I was scared that, you know, I wouldn't be what everyone expected me to be. And he recognized this, and so he did two things. The year before he asked me to play for him, he found a young drummer that was a year younger than me. And he came in the house talking all about how he'd found this young drummer. He was only 17 at the time. He was 18. Oh, this cat's only 17. He's got all the fire in the world. He's wonderful. I'm taking him on the road.
Well, didn't you get jealous when you...
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was setting me up to get ready because he knew I wouldn't move on my own. Sort of like kicking the bird out of the nest. He had to do it. So he found a motivator. So he finds this guy that's younger than me. So now that's already got me upset, right? And he let me simmer like that for years so that when he came to me and he said, "Are you ready to play?" I was of a mind, you know that whole thing, like you take the gig and you figure out who you're going to get to play it after, but take the gig. When he said, "Are you ready to play?" I just said yes, and I had no idea what I was in for, but I was in for the time of my life because from that point forward, you see, I got exposed to the things that I had always heard Max and Art and Ben Reilly and Frankie Dunlop and Roy Haynes and all the great drummers that played with Thelonious always talk about how when you're playing with Thelonious, his time is so impeccable and his groove is so solid that all you have to do is lay in the pocket and everyone will say you're great. I did it and it worked. See, Thelonious felt like this. Drummers play in three tempos. Most drummers, they play slow, medium and fast.
Yeah.
Now, each drummer has his concept of those three tempos. But basically, when you if you use the same drummer regularly and you say, "This is an up-tempo thing," he's going to give you basically the same up-tempo unless you say, "Oh, no, this is really fast," you know, and the same medium and the same down-tempo. So Thelonious and every drummer that ever worked with Thelonious has corroborated this. Love to pick the tempos that were in between the tempos. He'd check you out, see what your slow, medium, and fast was,
yeah,
and
see.
Then he'd get in between there and just upset your alpha card. But what it did was it rounded you out. It made you complete so that you had the complete spectrum of tempos because he played the complete spectrum of tempos, and he kept perfect time.
Well, listen, we've got to play.
Let's
because
play.
You're getting me excited, and you can set like your tempo for me, because if we play something like a medium thing, like "Well, You Needn't."
Sure.
And you set it up where you think he would play it.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station or stream the program online at pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina Public Radio.